This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Welcome to the Love Story Podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Green, where we are capturing the magic of every love story. Thank you for coming on the Love Story Podcast. I'm Ashley Green. I'm the host, and we have Mark Hicks in the podcast studio today. So, Mark, give us kind of a little background about why do we care about you on the Love Story Podcast?
Well, I am the author of the book, Learning Love, Building a Life That Matters, and Healthy Relationships at Last. It is from Morgan James Publishing, available wherever books are sold. And in that book, I teach the five components of love. And these five components, anyone can learn and practice these to build healthy, happy, thriving relationships in every area of life. This is in marriage and family, friendships, at work, loving what you do, loving your coworkers. Now, obviously, a marriage is a very different relationship than your coworkers, but the same principles, the same components that it takes to build a happy marriage, a happy family, go into building relationships with friends and community and work as well. The same components work everywhere. And so this is really how to build those healthy relationships. It makes love a learned skill set that we're not just guessing. We're not having a million moving parts trying to figure out all the mysteries of love. This is a way to conceptualize what love is and how to practice it in a healthy way.
So what background do you have? What are your qualifications for writing this book about love?
I have a master's degree in mental health counseling. I've been a professional counselor. I also have a background in spirituality and in theology. And in both of those areas, in counseling, almost everything we do is going to come back to relationships, whether it's a relationship with ourselves, a relationship with our family, whatever struggles we may be having in life, almost always comes down to relationships. In theology, it's the same thing. It's our relationship with ourselves, a relationship with other people, relationship with God. But maybe the greatest aspect or the greatest reason that I wrote this book is because early in my life, I ended up in a toxic first marriage that was an absolute disaster. Still have the emotional scars to prove that one.
Sure.
And when I came through that experience, it was devastating and it was very confusing because I came from a healthy family. I came from a good childhood. I'm the one that has the lucky story of having parents that loved each other and loved me and my sister and took good care of us. And I was protected and raised in a small town and all the just the typical stuff. And so I didn't realize relationships could be so hard and so tragic. And so when I ended up divorced, I was asking all of those questions of, is love really real? Or is it just some fantasy that some people happen to stumble into?
How old were you at this point?
I was married in my early 20s. I stuck that out for a long time. I was married for 13 years. That was way too long. I shouldn't have done that. But I believed that divorce wasn't an option. And I was egotistical. And I thought, I will make this work. I will find a way to make this marriage work. 13 years later, I was praying for death, so I decided that's not going to work. And so I was in my mid-30s when I'm asking these questions of, you know, is this even real? Is love even possible? And I'm making a living at this point as a counselor and as a minister in various capacities. And so I'm dealing with these questions on a psychological level, on a theological level, but also on a personal level. If love even exists, if love is really possible, if healthy relationships can really work, how do we do that? And so it was through that personal journey and also my background in theology and psychology that I came to this understanding that love really is real. It is possible. And it is something that we can practice. It can be a learned skill set. And I'm happy to say that over time, some of those wounds did heal. I'm remarried. I'm blissfully happy. Nothing is perfect, of course. I don't want to claim perfection, right. But we have a great relationship and I'm very happy. And I have said many times, I've had a bad marriage and a good marriage, and good is better. And yes, so we need to learn how to do that. We need to practice that and learn how that is done.
So taking that personal experience of like the tragic failed, you know, I can say from my personal experience, I'm a tragic empath in that way where it's like, I understand why you are the way that you are. And so you almost like allow that person to behave a certain way because I understand why you are this way. So I can make exceptions for you and just wait for you to catch up. When you're talking about this Learning Love book, is it like broad strokes overview, or do you go into some of those like, okay, this is how you're abusing yourself in your relationships and things like that?
Yeah, I go into detail on all that. In each of the five components, I break it down to not only what those components are, but how we live them out and how we deal with the aspect of how we love ourselves. That is a vastly important component of love. But also, how do we deal with these dysfunctional relationships? How do we deal with the struggles of yes, we do allow people to be who they are. We do have to allow that there are flaws in every relationship. There's flaws in every person. We're not always going to get it right. And we have to learn how to deal with that. Forgiveness is always a part of that. And yet there's a line. No one was put on this earth to be abused. And so I state in my book, some relationships do not need to continue. Some of them have to end. And sometimes people are surprised I say that because they think, because I'm writing a book about love and relationships, that I'm just going to talk about bubblegum and butterflies and everything's right, sweet and beautiful and all that. No, the reality is, if we want to have healthy relationships, we have to make room for them. And that means we have to sometimes end or limit these unhealthy relationships. Hopefully we can change them. We can do some healthy things. And I talk about that in the book as well, of how to go about being a healthy person and hopefully bringing about some changes. But when it can't, there has to be limits, there has to be boundaries, and sometimes those relationships have to end. And so, as you were saying, it's very good to be able to see a person and say, I get how you are, and I'm going to make accommodations for that. And we do absolutely have to do that, but only to align. We never were meant to be an abused person.
So what is there kind of like, if we're talking about what makes a healthy relationship, are there like certain universal components, or is it kind of something? Because I've also heard things too of, you know, the statistic of the most dangerous person to your relationship is a best friend who's going through a divorce and things like that, where it's like, you know, what are there things that are universal truths of like, this is okay, stop. You're just listening too much to the negativity and looking for negativity in your own life. Or is there something that it's like, if you're asking yourself these questions of like, is this relationship really good for me? What are the universal truths that we can all kind of take away?
Yeah, I think that's the important part of understanding these five components of love that I teach in the book, that when we understand those, we can always come back to that. That we're not blown by the wind or influenced by a friend who's going through a tough time or what our family says, that we can come back to the components of love and always ask ourselves what's working and what's not. If there is a problem in our relationship, which component is it with? Or maybe there's more than one. Most everyone, if they grew up particularly in a healthy family, which most people did not, but if you were lucky enough to, you probably learned one or two or three components of love just instinctively. But very few people have all five. And that's why we get out into the world, even if we came from a healthy family like I did, and we get out into the world and we're still not equipped. We still don't know how to live these healthy relationships. And it's just because we're generally not taught in society. We're just taught, go out there, date, kind of wing it, see who you're compatible with, and then
love at first sight.
Love at first sight.
The person who makes you feel Twitterpated, and then there you go, lock it in, have kids, get married, and hate yourself 5 years later.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And what that comes down to is emotion. Emotion is one of the components I teach, that it is a component of love. We don't dismiss that. We do want that emotional contact, that emotional connection, the emotional highs that we get from our experiences, particularly at the beginning. We all know that. But even throughout a relationship, there can be these moments of just bliss, of an emotional bliss that we experience in good relationships. We want that. That's not something that we want to ignore. But that's only one of five components. And that's where we get into a problem, is when we think, and that's what we tend to teach in society, that it's all about emotion. It's all about connection. Find that person you connect with. Well, that is one component. It's the second one I list in my book. The third component is practicality, and these balance each other. And we don't talk about that one as much. We don't make rom-com movies about the practical guy that makes good decisions.
Yeah.
But that is how we live well together. You may have heard someone say, well, I love them, but I can't live with them.
Mm-hmm.
Those are people that have done very well with the emotional side of love, the component of love that is what I list as the second one, emotion. But the third component of love, practicality, that's where they failed because they haven't lived well together. And this is things like, if you're a married couple, how do you deal with finances? What are your parenting decisions? Things like dealing with your mental health, because depression, anxiety, they take a terrible toll on people. They also take a toll on your relationships. And those are treatable conditions. And so it becomes a practical matter of, are you taking care of yourself? And on a practical level, sometimes you have to limit relationships. Maybe with that friend that's going through that tough time and wants to destroy your marriage. It doesn't mean we end the friendship, but it means we have to set some boundaries that we're not going to listen to. Or maybe with in-laws or your parents, that you have to set some boundaries of, how do I protect my new family, my new nuclear family, from my old one, from my now extended family. And those are all things we have to navigate. And when we understand those are practical matters, and they are just as important as the emotion, then we can balance those things. We begin to understand that it's not just about the emotional connection. It's about what decisions we make every day to make that relationship work over time. And those balance each other. If you lean too much more towards the practicality, though, and you're just checking off the list, all right, got parenting stuff done, we got dinner made, we did the homework, we got the yard mowed, we cleaned the house, we got everything checked off the list, then you're going to wake up and think, who is this person I live
yeah,
with?
Yeah, we're
why?
Roommates now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it has to, we also have to hold to the emotion. It's not one or the other. It's both. And that's the kind of thing I do in the book. With all five components, you can always look and say, what's working, what's not, and find the how-tos of how to tweak that area or two that you may be lacking.
Sure. So we have the emotional connection. We have the practicality. What are the kind of the other ones that you hit on?
Yeah, the first component of love is grief. And that's
okay.
That one surprises people because, again, we think it's all about what's the sweet and beautiful connection. And that is part of it, as I said. But no one gets through this life without scars.
Sure.
Everyone gets hurt along the way. And so when we fail to deal with that in a healthy way, we have a tendency to put up barriers. We have a tendency to put up emotional walls that keep people out. We keep people at arm's length. We don't want to be hurt. And it makes a lot of sense when we've been hurt, particularly in childhood, which a lot of people have through dysfunctional families. We put up these emotional walls trying to protect ourselves. What we actually do is build our own emotional prison. And we are not able to connect with people because we're afraid of getting hurt. When we know how to grieve, when we know how to go through that grief process, grief is a healer. Grief is the way that we have a comeback story. You're not going to avoid the hurts of life, but we need a comeback story. And knowing how to grieve allows us to do that. It allows us to get to a place where we can't change what happened, but we can still go on to a good life. I often say, and I write this in the book, that some things are so painful it leaves a hole in our heart, but you can live a really good life with a hole in your heart.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Once you learn that, then you can go through the pain of life, come back from that, and live that good life with a hole in your heart, just like someone might have to if they had a physical accident, if they lost an arm in an industrial accident. Life's never the same. The arm's not growing back, but you can really live a great life. It just takes some learning how. The same thing is true emotionally. We have that hole in our heart. We have emotional scars, but you can live a really good life. You just have to learn how. The grief process is how we do that. We come back from that.
So what would you say to people then? Because as you're talking about that, you know, if you identify a person who, I mean, everybody knows the people who have the walls up that are so high and they're just impenetrable and, yeah. You know, oh, if it hurts too much, I could never open myself up to love again. Okay. And like you're saying, okay, that's one way to do it, but you can live a good life, even all things considered. To the people, is there an opposite perspective of like, oh, you're too open. You have zero walls. Like, is that a potential problem too?
Absolutely it is. And that's where we come into practicality. That third component I mentioned earlier of boundaries, of knowing how to take care of yourself in a, physically, mentally, emotionally, of not allowing yourself to be abused, of not allowing yourself to be taken advantage of. And so, yes, we have a way of protecting ourselves through boundaries, but that's different than building emotional walls. Boundaries is an aspect that says, it doesn't say I keep everyone out. That's those emotional walls. Boundary says everyone's welcome to live here with me as long as we're living together in this healthy realm. That
sure.
I'm going to live this way. This is how I'm going to live my life. I'm going to live myself, live my life in this healthy way. And if you want to live that way with me, you're welcome. If not, you're choosing to leave. And so it's not that you're keeping people out. You're allowing people to not be in your life because they're choosing to live a different life than the healthy one you choose to. That's the difference between boundaries and emotional walls. So grief, we have to overcome the emotional walls. Then we come to the emotion that I mentioned earlier. We have those connections. Third component is the practicality. We still have boundaries. Doesn't keep people out. It just allows them to leave if they're not going to live that healthy life. And we live together. We live together well. And one of the things that brings that together, all of those together so far, is the fourth component, which is acceptance. And this is twofold. As we mentioned earlier, you have to accept other people within limits, not abuse, but we have to accept flaws. But more importantly, you have to accept yourself. You cannot love other people more than you love yourself. Brené Brown's done some great research and writing on this. Other people have as well. You cannot love other people more than you love yourself. That's the limit. You have to love yourself first. And a lot of people, they wonder, well, you know, I've come through the tough times of life and I think I've grieved through them and we've had an emotional connection and we're living life pretty well, you know.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
What's wrong? Very often, it's because we're not really loving ourselves. We're trying to love our family, our friends. We're trying to love what we do for a living. We're trying to love all these things, and we aren't really loving ourselves. And that doesn't work because love is not a commodity like money. If you need more money, you can get a second job. You can borrow from a friend or from a bank. Love is organic. It has to be grown within us. So you can't give more away than you have growing within you. And that begins with loving yourself, accepting who you are, accepting the journey that you're on. Loving yourself is an absolutely vital component. And you can't love other people more than that. That will be your limit. So if you want to love your spouse, your family, your friends more than you are currently loving them, if you want to have more love in your life, love yourself more. And when we love ourselves, then it's easier to grieve because you deserve that comeback story. It's easier to connect emotionally, and it's easier to make good practical decisions because you're doing it from a place of loving yourself so you can love others.
I like the way that you said that, that love is organic and you have to grow it. You can't just go acquire more of it. So then from that perspective, we all can kind of identify people in our lives that are like, oh, you maybe, you know, I think there's a level of self-deprecating humor that can be funny, but then there's the people who are just like, ah, you know, I suck or whatever. Everything is awful. I'm not great at anything, blah, blah, blah. And like, right. In terms of a loving romantic relationship too, you can kind of see that where it's like, if I come to you and I say, hey, I have a problem with this, and your response is, well, yeah, I know, I totally suck. How would you remedy that in a way in another person when you hear them saying those things?
Yeah, that's kind of a defense mechanism very often, is you just kind of give up. But the thing is, if you love yourself, it's easier to take criticism because it's not about who you are. It's about what you did. And so if somebody comes to you, you love yourself fully. That doesn't mean we're perfect in all of our actions. We're human. We make mistakes, but we love ourselves fully. Somebody comes to you and says, hey, you know, you kind of messed that up. Then you can look at it and say, yeah, I kind of messed that up. I'll change that. And it's not a deprecating thing. It doesn't mean you suck. It doesn't mean that you failed. It means that you are a human being that made a mistake and we can fix that. And so we don't have to be defensive. A lot of our defensiveness comes because we don't feel good about ourselves. We're already beating ourselves up. We say such terrible things to ourselves. We spend the whole day just putting ourselves down. If we do a really great thing, we ignore it. But if we do something bad, we spend all day saying, you know, how dumb was that? And we put ourselves down so much that we're just weary of it. And so then when somebody else comes along and says, hey, you messed that up, we're just exhausted already from how we talk to ourselves. If we stop that, and it's a habit, it will feel weird at first, but start talking good to yourself. It will feel weird. And the reason it does is because our brain has to form new neural pathways to talk nice to ourselves. We're so unaccustomed to doing it that our brain literally doesn't know how. And so you have to build new neural pathways in your brain to talk good to yourself instead of bad. And I know that sounds silly, but it's absolutely true. And you have to practice it. And so start talking nice to yourself. Start saying good things about yourself. And it'll take time and it will feel awkward at first, but everything feels awkward at first when you first start. You know, first time you picked up a basketball or the first time you tried to cook something in the kitchen, it always feels awkward the first time. So just practice. Talk well to yourself, be nice to yourself, and get into that habit. And when we do, then a lot of times that criticism, like I said, it's just, it's what we did. It's not who we are. And that's a big difference.
Sure. A friend of mine, she does self-defense training. And she said that your body will not go where your brain hasn't already gone.
Right.
And so it's kind of in that same thing. If you have been telling yourself over and over again all the bad things, of course, that's the river that's most carved out, you know, down the in the ravine, whatever, that's where the water's going to flow. So for advice for someone who is maybe in a relationship with someone who isn't great in that acceptance stage and like understanding that, hey, we're all human, all of that, can you be a person who helps like kind of pull someone like, hey, let's, you know, direct them in that healthier way? Can you start with the, like the words of affirmation to kind of teach them?
Absolutely. Encouragement means a lot. And
sure.
And some people get into habits they don't realize they are. If you say something and they say, yeah, I know I suck, you can call them on it. Say, you know what? You really don't, you know, and don't say that to yourself. That's not nice, you know, but we just need to correct this action. It has nothing to do. You know, you don't suck. You're a good person and I care about you. I love you, but we just need to correct this one action. And if you start framing it that way, I think it helps other people kind of get into that mode eventually. It takes time because a lot of people have habits that they started as children that were passed down to them by their parents criticizing them. And so they've never had an opportunity to really form those neural pathways of how do I speak kindly to myself? And so it takes time. Be patient.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, encourage people. And when you hear them say nasty stuff about themselves, say, you know, don't say that. That's no way to talk to yourself. And it's just not true. And
yeah.
So just kind of encouraging, but be patient. Don't push it and don't criticize their criticism. You know, be patient about it and just kind of let them recognize what they're doing. Because like I said, it's such a habit. Some people don't even realize it anymore.
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, it's all of the ways of just being kind to the people around you and guiding and showing them. You can't guide someone into kindness with an iron fist. So, yeah, that would make sense. Welcome to Green Thumb Etc., home of custom furniture upholstery, designer floral, and exclusive giftware. Do you need to find a gift for that crazy aunt that has everything? You'll find it at Green Thumb. Do you have grandma's old chair that nobody wants anymore, but you just don't have a heart to throw away? I can upholster it for you. Or do you need flowers for someone to say, I'm sorry, or to say, I love you? You can find that here too. Come on down to the corner of 7th and St. Germain in downtown St. Cloud, and you can shop to your weirdo heart's content. Find us online at greenthumbetc.com or Facebook or Instagram at greenthumbetc. At this point, you're already familiar with the way the Love Story podcast operates. However, there are some stories that can't be told on the Love Story that need to be told after dark. So we started Love Story After Dark, a podcast on Patreon. There's all sorts of bonus content that you can find on Patreon, audio, video, special swag, all kinds of stuff. So if you're looking at just wanting to get the audio of the Love Story After Dark, that's $5 a month. If you want to get audio and video, $10 a month. If you want to be a part of the Sticker Club and get exclusive sticker swag, that's $25 a month. And for $50 a month, you can get the elite bonus merch. However, you don't have to pay any money to just get exclusive clips from any of our After Dark episodes. Get yourself added to the email list so you can get notifications for when new content drops for the Love Story podcast After Dark. So then the fifth one, what would you say that one would be?
The fifth one is passion. And this is really a passion for life. This is the wind in our sails. This is having a passion for your life, your family, what you do for a living, just enjoying life. And the way to enjoy life is to have fun. fun is more important than people realize. We need to enjoy our life. Now, you're not going to enjoy everything. And we recognize that life is serious sometimes. That's why practicality is the third component of love. And we know life can be tragic. And that's why grief is the first component of love. We don't ignore that. But let's also not ignore the other side. We need to have fun. We need to enjoy our relationships. We need to enjoy what we do for a living. We need to enjoy our kids, our spouse. Have fun doing the stuff of life. And when we make fun a priority, not just waiting for it to happen, not just hoping someday we'll have some fun, but make it a priority in your life, it makes a huge difference in your relationships. And there's a lot of people, again, they'll go through the components without even knowing what they are sometimes, but they'll think, you know, I've come through those tough times. I've done well through that. I know we love each other. We have an emotional connection. We're making a lot of good decisions. We've got the house. We got the cars. We got the good jobs. Kids are fine. All the things are going well. And you know, we even feel good about ourselves. So what's missing? Well, what's missing sometimes is because you've been told the way to be happy in life is to get your degree or get your education or whatever you do, get your job, get promoted, find that special someone, get married, have kids, buy the house. And we check that list off, and very often in your mid-30s or 40s, you get that whole checklist done, and you think, is this it? Mm-hmm. Well, it is it, but what you missed was you forgot to have fun doing it. You just got it. You go into a checklist because somebody gave it to you, because society or parents or whatever gives us that list, and we check all that off, and we think it's going to lead to something. No, it can be exciting to do all those things. That's great stuff, but we need to learn to have passion about doing it, to have fun doing it and to enjoy doing it and laugh every chance you get. Never miss an opportunity because life is hard. So let's try to enjoy the parts that are. And again, that goes back to our brains because our brains are wired up to protect us. And so it's always going to be on the lookout for stuff that's bad. It's going to be on the lookout for stuff that will hurt us physically or things that will offend us or hurt us emotionally or anything like that. It has feelers out all the time, vision out all the time, looking for things that will hurt us. Because it's there to protect us. That's the primary base goal of the brain, is to keep us alive and keep us from being hurt physically and emotionally. So we have to actually train our brains to see the fun, to see the enjoyment, to think about what is enjoyable about today. Our brains will be looking on what could hurt us. We have to train it to actually look for what's funny, what is enjoyable, what's fun today. And when we do that, it's going to affect every relationship we have, that we can actually go to work and look forward to getting there because we're going to have fun today. Everything's not going to go well all the time, but we're going to have as much fun as we can. We're going to go home and we're going to enjoy our families. We're going to enjoy the kids and our spouse and enjoy having that nice house that we've worked so hard for. We actually enjoy those things because we have a passion for life. And that takes just as much paying attention and make that a priority as any of the others. So if you can grieve and come through the tough times to have that comeback story, in order to stay connected in that emotional connection, and you live life together well in a practical way, you love yourself so that you can love others, and you have a passion for life, and you're having fun doing all of that, you can build healthy relationships in every area of life.
Yeah. It's kind of almost that, like, living in the moment, staying in the moment, being present, and it, a little bit of, like, it's almost like you're making an intentional time to meditate on love. It's, you know, the manifesting and all of those things that people say, the hot buzzwords of today, but you're laying it out in a way that's not just like, oh, just manifest love. Like, it's like, no, there's actually like a formula to it. And it makes sense when you break it down. And you can't ignore the hard stuff. You can't ignore the fact that, like, yep, you've been hurt before. And yes, like, you know, everybody's parents are going to die someday and whatever. And so, prepare yourself to be emotionally stable through it.
And so, that is part of manifestation, is what actions lead us into manifesting that life. And so this is a way to do that. Love is all around us. We have people in our lives that love us, or we have potential of developing that. But it's a matter of having those components conceptualized so that we're not blocking that, so that we are coming through grief, so that we are living a practical way, so that we are looking for the places of fun so we can have passion in our life. And knowing what's going wrong, again, as I said earlier, we may have three of these, four of these that we've come through pretty well. But if you're missing one, it's not going to destroy your life, but you're going to think something's missing. Well, yeah. Now you can see what's missing. We can actually conceptualize it and say, this is the one I'm missing and this is how I work on it.
Well, and I think what I really like about the message too behind this is you're not saying that it's like the only way to having a fulfilled life is through a romantic relationship. You're saying this is, I mean, these are all things that apply to everything. You know, for the person who doesn't want to get out of bed in the morning, I get it that sometimes the world is a scary, hurtful place. But if you look for the passion and you are being practical about it and you're allowing yourself to grieve, yesterday was a day, today we're going to have a better day. And just changing your mindset.
Exactly. This is not a one size fits all. Everybody has to fit into the married with 2.3 children and the house in the suburbs. That's not it at all. If someone lives that life, you know, bless them. I'm happy for them if that's what they want and they enjoy that. But your love, the love of your life, may be what you do for a living.
Sure.
If you're, I'm just making this up. Maybe you're a scientist and you are truly making a profound change in the world. That may be your love. You still are going to have those days where you're discouraged and you have to grieve. You still need that emotional connection with your job and what you do and to feel that joy of it. You still have to be practical and get the job done. And every job's a grind sometimes. You have to love yourself because you can't really give to a job if you don't have anything to give. So you have to love yourself so that you are loving what you do and what you're contributing to the world. But you have to love yourself in order to do that. And finally, obviously, if you're going to contribute something big to the world through your job, you have to have a passion for it and you have to enjoy it. And so these components apply to anything you might love of any life you may build. Most of the time in the book, I refer to family and marriage, but it can be applied to how we run corporate offices, how we build communities, how we build society. I really believe love is the answer. I say this all the time. Now we just have to explore all the questions. And so when we apply these components to the questions of life, how do we build a better office environment? How do we build a better family? How do we improve society? It is about love, and it's about applying these components of love in order to build that society, family, and office.
What would your advice be to someone who, if you're looking at it from a relationship, from a practicality standpoint, and from a passion standpoint, and all of these things that you're talking about, how would you guide someone if they're saying, you know, we've walked a path together for so long talking romantic relationships, or I suppose this could be applied to in any way too, for someone who, if you are in your career, you're in your, you know, trying to set boundaries with family, anything, you know, I've done this life for a while, can't tell if it's bringing me joy anymore. Is there kind of a, like, if you refer back to all five things, you've hit the checklist, I've learned love, but now I just don't know, is this person or is this lifestyle really going to be aligning with me anymore? How do you say, I've done this path for a while and maybe now I'm going to go on to a different path?
Yeah, we come to that place sometimes if relationships just aren't working. As I said earlier, some relationships have to end. That's why grief is the first component, because you're going to grieve that relationship, even if it's a bad one. You've lost the dream of that relationship. But we come to a place sometimes that we realize I've been giving myself to a career that just is not me. This is not aligned with who I am. I'm just doing it for a paycheck and I need something different. We come to those places in life. And so my advice, and I do say this in the book, when you are at these crossroads, when you're dealing especially with grief issues or abuse issues or some of these major things, don't wing it. Get help. Talk to people. Talk to people that you trust. And that can be friends and family, but always remember your friends and family are emotionally involved and they don't always get the best advice because they're talking sometimes from the way that protects them. You know, your parents don't want you to quit your job because they're scared for you. And so they may not give the best advice, even if it is time for you to move on to a different career. So get professional help. Don't be afraid to get professional. Find a coach, find a therapist, find a counselor. Don't be afraid of that. Any stigma people have to that, with all due respect, is just wrong. But, you know, let's look at it from a practical standpoint. You go to a doctor if you have a physical injury. You go to a dentist to fix your teeth if you have a toothache. You go to a mechanic if your car is not running well. We call plumbers. We call lawyers. I can go through a whole list of professionals that we depend on to help us in a particular area. Why would we do anything different when it comes to our mental health, our emotional health, and these major decisions of life, particularly when it comes to relationships? If we're at that place that we're thinking, this has not worked in a long time, or maybe never worked, but I'm just continually draining myself for it. Or maybe you're at a place that's saying, maybe we can make it work, but I don't know how. Get help. Find someone, a coach, a counselor, a therapist, and get that professional help from someone. There are lots of people out there that are available to give help in those areas and walk with you individually in your unique circumstance. But I promise you, if you go to a therapist or you go to a counselor and you say, you know, I'm just to that place that I need to make a change and I'm not sure how, there is never going to be a counselor to say, wow, never heard that one before.
Yeah, I was.
We're there. We all experience that. And so get the help. They know how to help you.
I think that's the thing, because a person, if you're looking at a car or whatever, if you're like you're talking about a mechanic, you think to yourself, but I live in this body. I've lived my life for how many years or whatever. So nobody is going to know me better than me. But you've learned a lot of your entire life is a lot of instincts based on trauma, essentially. Right. And it's a lot of choices that you've made based on generations of your parents that had a thought and they put something down on you. Yeah, you might be thinking to yourself, I have all the answers for this body and this mind. But like a mechanic who's maybe never worked on, you know, if you think to yourself, yeah, but you've never worked on my car. Yeah, but I've worked on a Ford Taurus before, so exactly. I can figure it out. There's nothing new underneath this hood. Yeah. I know the answer.
That's a great analogy. I love that. I'll probably steal that at some point. That really does sum it up. Because, yeah, exactly. And the thing is, don't be so sure you know yourself. Because very often, if you ask somebody, if you really push them, and say, why are you doing this? Particularly if it's something that's not working for them. Very many people are going to say, well, that's just the way I was raised.
Mm-hmm.
That's a terrible reason to do anything. Mm-hmm. That's not a reason. That's just telling us how you were raised. That's not a reason why you're doing this. But people just instinctively do these things. And that goes to show you really don't know yourself. You don't know why you're doing it. You have no idea why you're doing what you're doing or why you're making the decisions you made. If you're basing it on, you know, what your friends are doing or what your family did or generations of what your family has done. If that's the reason you're doing it, then you don't really have a reason. You're just following that group. And that's not a reason. And so when we go into therapy, we begin to understand there are actual reasons to do things and we can make choices. And it doesn't have to be just what our family did. That's a really bad reason. Always ask yourself, if you find yourself saying, well, that's just the way I was raised. Well, were they right?
Right.
And that doesn't mean we don't love them. It doesn't mean they're not good people. But people are wrong sometimes. And so we have to make new decisions.
Well, and I think learning to trust yourself, too, as a person who, like, I know from my history growing up, I was kind of the emotional regulator, taking temperature of everybody in the room and making sure everybody's happy and all emotions run through me for cleansing and whatever. And then I've now, as an adult, had to ask myself the questions of, like, it almost makes you, when you have that epiphany moment of like, wow, I don't know why I do the things that I do, or I don't know what I want. Mm-hmm. Then you start to second guess and question every thought you've ever had. If you're doing it right, you should be questioning yourself every step of the way. And am I actually checking in with yourself? Do I want this? Am I happy with what I'm doing? And the more you ask yourself questions, the more you'll be able to eventually get the answers to it, because you're taking just that brief moment to sit and think with yourself. Why do I want this? And what do I actually want?
Yeah. And this is why the components of love can be so valuable, because just in that scenario, we can ask the question, is that practical? Do we really think we can monitor everyone's emotion and keep everyone just on tap exactly as they need to be to make everything run smooth? Sometimes we may get that right, but it's really not practical to do that all the time. And secondly, how does that fit into loving ourselves? Because very often when it doesn't work and it can't work all the time, then are we a failure? Do we feel bad about ourselves then? Most people would say, yeah, I kind of do. And that goes back to, then you're not loving yourself. You're having a conditional love of yourself. If I make everyone happy, then I can love myself. That's never going to work. When we start to look at what we're doing through the lens of these components, we can see already that there's two very easy to see that we're not being very practical, because that can't work. And we're not really loving ourselves. And so we can't really love others. That's not an act of love. That's an act of habit. And it's an act of survival. But it's not an act of love to try to monitor everyone and get everyone lined up just right. That's a survival mechanism in some families. But it's not an act of love for them or ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't hit on the boundaries and all of those things that you were talking about.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what would you say now in our kind of modern day society? We've got reality shows. We've got all kinds of different things, different ways to consume love. And we have access to people and we can creep on social media of all of our exes and things like that. What do you think are some of the more destructive things that are happening in our society in a way that is just kind of accepted as this kind of love, I would say love abuse, mental health abuse, and what would you say are some of the more dangerous, like, love tropes?
In 2023, the Surgeon General of the U.S. Put out a report talking about the epidemic of loneliness, and he called it a public health crisis. And I think that is the most dangerous thing that we really deal with now, is that we do have, as you said, so many contacts with so many people through social media, through jobs, through all these things. We have so many people in our life. There's no shortage of contact with people, and yet we are the loneliest we've ever been as a society. And it's running rampant. This is, like I say, it's a public health crisis. This is not just a few people or one generation not doing well. It is across the board public health crisis because we are lonely. And so we have substituted contact, or as you said, you know, we can bring in the visions of love through reality television, which is not really reality. But, you know, we consume a lot of love type entertainment, and we see a lot of people on social media, and we have a lot of interaction, but we're not really connecting. And that's why it's so important to know what love is, that it's more than it's not something that we can just consume. We can't just kind of get it around us and have that satisfy us. You know, it can be entertaining. I'm not going to criticize those shows. If you find it entertaining, good. That's great. I don't criticize social media. Obviously, there's some dangers to it. But if you enjoy that, keep it healthy, enjoy it. There's a lot of good things to it. But are we really making connections? Are we really having real relationships? And that's why understanding what love is and how to practice it is so important. The danger is we just assume if we're around it, it must just happen, that it's just magic. And it's not. It is a practice. This idea that love is magic, that it just happens instinctively, that we all just know how. No, we don't. We learned it even as children. It's sort of like learning to walk. You learned it before you remember learning it, but you still learned it. There were still people there helping you, and it was still, you know, trying and failing. And before we learned to walk, we just don't remember that. The same is true with love. If you came from a healthy family, you may have learned a lot of it without even remembering you learned it, but you still learned it. The good news there is if you did not come from a healthy family and you learn nothing about love, you can still learn it because it's a learnable quality, that there is a skill set to it. And so I think the biggest danger we face is that we are just lonely, and we've made consumption of love type things and materials and all that we see on screens a substitute for understanding what love is and how to practice it.
Well, it's a lot less scary when you think about it. And when you apply it to the terms of the ways to learn love too, it kind of bypasses the grief entirely and doesn't allow you to accept the fact that, yeah, it hurts. And yes, like sometimes being rejected. And we are all kind of sharing this. What I love about social media and about, you know, your Instagrams and who you follow and all of that kind of stuff, it's like we are all sharing this universal experience of betrayal and shame and embarrassment and being awkward and all of these things. But I think when people assign a label to themselves of I'm just awkward, and then they go through kind of like you're talking about with like the pathways, the neurological pathways in your brain. Yep. If everything that you've done is told yourself that you're awkward or told yourself that you have ADHD or whatever, and you've given yourself this label and you've embraced this label, then you are not allowing yourself to move past the grief and into the acceptance and into the self-love and the boundaries and all of these things that you're talking about.
Exactly,
so it's
right.
Almost like this label culture is kind of entirely disregarding how to learn love, essentially.
Yeah, we buy into the labels and then we don't learn how to love. If we love ourselves, we're not going to label ourselves that way. If we learn to love ourselves, we're going to realize that label was wrong the whole time. And that we can grieve that. We can say, well, kind of wasted a lot of years of my life believing that lie about me, but allowing myself to believe that. But I can grieve that. I can go on. Is there an emotional scar there, a sadness that I lived with that for so long, or that was placed on me by my family, my parents telling me I was this way or that way? Yeah, there's a grief to that. But as we grieve that, we heal from that. We may have that hole in our heart, but we can live a really good life with a hole in our heart. And we learn to love ourselves so that if other people come along and say, you know, well, you're pretty awkward. Well, yeah, that's your opinion. We don't have to buy into all that. Or even if I am. So,
yeah.
You know, that, so what? That's not anything that I have to feel bad about myself for. And we're all on this journey. If there's some things that we can improve if we want to, there's some things that we can just accept. Some people, maybe they are awkward. So what? That's just a personality trait. It can be charming. And so as we learn to love ourselves and we learn to grieve, those two components come together in order to get past a lot of that stuff of these labels we've had put on ourselves or we've adopted or that we put on ourselves somehow. I'm kind of convinced that even if we think we put it on ourselves, somebody else, probably in our family, gave it to us and we accepted it. And so don't beat yourself up.
Yeah.
Learn to grieve. Get some help if it's something that's really holding you back. Get some help for that. Get some counseling. Overcome that, grieve that, and learn to love yourself more so that those labels don't define you.
I really appreciate having just this alternate perspective of conversations, and it makes my brain tingle from just having this like high level when you're talking to somebody who knows their stuff and you're like, ooh, I'm learning. I can feel the neural pathways in my brain making connections. So thank you so much for that. We're kind of right at our 45-minute time here. So before I send you off, where can we hear more from you, and hit us again with the name of your book and where we can find it when it comes out?
Name of my book is Learning Love, Building a Life That Matters and Healthy Relationships That Last. You can go to my website, markahicks.com. Make sure you get my middle initial in there. My last name is H-I-C-K-S, markahicks.com. And there's easy links to my book. You can find the other things that's going on in my life. I do have a podcast, the Learning Love podcast. It's available on all platforms. And there's a contact form there. So I'm available for workshops, for seminars, for public speaking, and for coaching. And so I'd love for folks, if I can be of service, get with me on the website and let me know how I can help.
Thank you so much. This is wonderful having you here. I am so excited to get your book and to go through and read it, and love to connect with you in the future. Thank you so much, Mark.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Love Story Podcast. You can subscribe to the show and you can follow us at the Love Story Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Do you think you have a love story for the ages? Do you think you have a love story that's like a meet cute? Or maybe you just have a regular old love story, but you guys have been together for so long that you don't even remember how you met? We would love to have you on the Love Story Podcast to tell your story. Every love story is unique. Every love story is special. And whether you think you've got a cool story, a funny story, or just a heartwarming story, or just a story of the everyday regular old love, that's the kind of stuff we want to hear. Reach out at info@lovestoryweddingshow.com and we will schedule a time to get you featured on the Love Couch. If you're not local, we have the capabilities of doing it digitally as well. So don't forget to reach out info@lovestoryweddingshow.com or head to the show notes.